All right, so get this. We're going deep on a case called Milkovich v. Lorraine Journal Co. And let me tell you, you guys sent in some seriously interesting stuff about it.
Oh, yeah. This one goes way back, huh?
Back to 1990. But get this. It's all about a high school wrestling coach.
Wrestling, huh?
Yeah. So apparently, there's this crazy match, a big hearing afterwards, and then, boom, a local newspaper column accuses the coach of, well, basically lying under oath during the whole thing.
Whoa, perjury accusations in print. That's got to be a legal minefield.
Seriously. So it's like we're mixing Friday Night Lights with, like, Law and Order, right? Yeah. We got to figure this out.
Definitely. I mean, this case went all the way to the Supreme Court, so it's a pretty big deal. Even today, it shapes how we think about free speech, defamation, the whole nine yards. It really gets at that question, you know, of like, can you just call someone a liar and then be all, oh, but it's just my opinion, so I'm good.
Right. Like, where's the line? Everyone's probably wondered that at some point. So, okay, walk us through this. What even happened to kick off this legal battle?
All right, so picture this. It's 1974, right? We're in Ohio, and Milkovich is coaching a high school wrestling team. They're up against their rivals, things get intense, and, well, a brawl breaks out.
Oh, come on, a brawl. What happened next?
Chaos, right. So Milkovich's team ends up getting put on probation by the Ohio High School Athletic Association, you know, the OHSAA.
Yeah, got it.
They basically ban the team from the state tournament.
Oof, tough break for the team. I bet Milkovich wasn't happy about that.
Not even a little bit. He and the school superintendent felt like the whole hearing was unfair, like their rights were totally trampled on.
Well, I get it. What'd they do?
They took the OHSAA to court over it, and guess what? They won. The court actually reversed the decision.
No way. They actually overturned it.
Yep. But here's where the plot thickens. The very next day, a sports columnist, a guy named J. Theodore Diadian, he writes this column in the News Herald, the local paper owned by Lorraine Journal Co. And in that column, he basically accuses Milkovich of lying under oath during the court case. Seriously. Talk about adding insult to injury. I mean, this guy just won his case and now he's being called a liar. That's gotta hurt.
Yeah, being labeled a liar publicly, that can really damage someone's reputation.
Yeah.
So Milkovich was like, nope, not having it. He decided to sue Diadian and the Lorraine Journal Co. for defamation. And thus began this epic legal saga, a battle that dragged on for, get this, 15 years.
Hold up, 15 years? You're kidding, right? That's insane. What took so long?
Well, the case bounced back and forth between the lower courts for years. The judges couldn't agree on where exactly to draw the line between opinion, you know, stuff protected by the First Amendment, and statements that could be considered defamatory. It was a real tug of war. And it wasn't until 1990 that this case finally landed in the lap of the Supreme Court.
Wow, so this wasn't just some local squabble. This became a major First Amendment showdown. So what did the Supreme Court say? Did they back the newspaper's right to publish their opinion?
No, not this time. The Supreme Court actually sided with Milkovich in a 7-2 decision. They basically said, look, even though Diadian didn't outright use the word perjury in his column, the implication was there. The court was like, that's enough to be considered potentially defamatory.
Makes sense. But didn't the newspaper try to argue like, hey, First Amendment, freedom of speech, we have the right to say what we think, even if it's about Milkovich?
They did. And that's precisely why Milkovich is such a landmark case. The Supreme Court basically laid down the law. They said, listen, the First Amendment doesn't just give you this blanket opinion privilege that lets you off the hook if your opinion is actually implying something false about someone.
So basically, you can't just yell opinion and think you're invincible. You can't just say whatever you want about someone and be protected. There's got to be some accountability, right?
Exactly. The court made it crystal clear. Context matters. Even if you start with, in my opinion, you still have to back up what you're saying, especially if you're implying someone did something wrong. That's a good point. So how did the Supreme Court figure out where the line is between an okay opinion and something that could get you in trouble?
Well, they focused on whether a statement implies something that could be actually proven true or false. It's not about whether you slap an opinion label on it. It's about whether there's any factual basis for what you're saying.
So it's not some magic shield to just say, oh, it's just my opinion. There's a deeper level of analysis going on.
Right. Justice Rehnquist, the guy who wrote the majority opinion, he put it this way. The real question is whether the statement implies a factual claim.
So, like, if I see something wild, like, I think the sky is purple, that's one thing. But if I say, I think my neighbor's cooking meth, that's a whole other story.
You got it. And if it turns out your neighbor isn't making meth and you had no reason to think they were, well, you could be facing legal trouble.
This is all super interesting, and I can already tell this case has had ripple effects way beyond this one coach and one newspaper column. But let's dive into those broader implications and the dissenting opinion, maybe after we grab some coffee.
You know, it's true, though, this case really did kind of send shockwaves through the media world.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, journalists had to take notice, right? After this ruling, they couldn't just hide behind, like, oh, it's just my opinion.
Exactly. Milkovich really forced everyone in the media, reporters, commentators, you name it, to be way more careful about how they phrase things, especially when they were covering, you know, hot-button topics.
I bet. So how did Milkovich actually change, like, the nuts and bolts of defamation law? Did it suddenly make it easier for people to sue?
Well, not necessarily easier to sue, but it definitely brought a lot more clarity to defamation cases. Before Milkovich, things were kind of murky. The line between fact and opinion, super blurry. And that made it hard for courts to consistently apply the First Amendment, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So Milkovich gave him a better framework to work with, something to really analyze those cases.
Exactly. But hold on, we haven't even touched on the dissenting opinion in this whole thing. Some justices were worried about this ruling, right? They thought it might actually stifle free speech.
Right, right. It makes sense, though, if you think about it. I mean, robust debate, the kind we want in a free society, it often needs strong opinions, right? Like, imagine if everyone was too scared to speak their mind because they were worried about getting sued.
That's exactly what Justice Brennan argued in his dissent. He thought this whole thing could lead to a chilling effect, especially for, like, journalists and public commentators. He was worried they'd shy away from expressing bold opinions, even if those opinions were totally legit, you know, backed up by facts.
That's an important point. I mean, opinions should be able to be strong without people fearing a lawsuit every time.
Totally. And Brennan believed that context was key. He felt like if you looked at Diadian's column as a whole, it was pretty obvious it was an opinion piece. Like, a reasonable reader wouldn't have taken it as pure fact. Brennan thought the majority opinion, you know, the one that sided with Milkovich, didn't give enough weight to the context of the whole thing.
So even the Supremes were divided on where the line should be, right? It's like a constant balancing act, protecting individual reputations while also ensuring we have that freedom of speech. But okay, here's a question. We're talking about a case from 1990, right? A printed newspaper column. How does this even apply today in the age of the internet and social media? It's a whole different world out there.
Oh man, you're telling me. It's the million-dollar question, right? The legal system is playing catch-up, big time. It's still struggling to wrap its head around how fast communication is evolving thanks to the internet. Now, the principles from Milkovich haven't gone away, but applying those principles to the wild world of the internet, that's a whole other ballgame.
Yeah, no kidding. Social media is a beast. I mean, think about how fast information spreads online. The sheer volume of opinions and accusations flying around every second is overwhelming.
It's true. We're talking about a level of speed and reach that didn't exist back in 1990. What might have been a private conversation back then can go viral in a nanosecond now, reaching a global audience with a few clicks. It's insane. And that creates, you know, unique challenges for defamation law.
So, like, how do you even begin to apply the whole Milkovich standard to, say, a random tweet or a Facebook rant?
Context, my friend, context. It's become even more crucial in the online world. Now courts have to look at all these new factors: the specific platform, the intended audience, the overall tone and style of the message, everything. Like a sarcastic comment on Twitter, it might be interpreted totally differently from, say, a super polished blog post. It's all about the nuances.
It sounds like a legal nightmare, especially with all the, like, subtle ways we communicate online.
Oh, for sure. It adds a whole new layer of complexity. And then there's this other tricky concept: actual malice. It's a major factor in defamation cases. Basically, actual malice means the person who made the defamatory statement, they knew it was false, or they acted with reckless disregard for the truth.
So it's not just about the statement itself, it's about the intent behind it.
You got it. And proving actual malice.
Yeah.
It was already hot enough in traditional defamation cases, but online, man, it's even harder. It's like, how do you determine what someone really knew or believed when they hit that share button or retweeted something without even checking if it was true? It's a tough one.
We're basically in uncharted territory here, right?
Yeah.
Trying to apply legal ideas from before the internet to this digital world. So how are the courts even dealing with all this? Are there any cases that show how Milkovich is being used to handle online defamation?
There are actually quite a few cases tackling these very issues. One that comes to mind is from 2014. It involved Courtney Love, the musician. She went on Twitter and said some not so nice things about a fashion designer, and the designer sued her for defamation. They ended up settling, but that case really put a spotlight on how tricky it is to apply old school defamation law to the world of social media.
So even celebrities aren't immune to the whole Milkovich thing. It's a good reminder that words have weight no matter where you say them.
Absolutely. The principles of Milkovich are for everyone, no matter how famous you are or how many followers you have online. But yeah, social media has definitely thrown a wrench into the works. It's raised a lot of questions about how those principles get interpreted and applied in the digital age.
It's wild, isn't it, to think how Milkovich, a case from 1990, is still so relevant? I'm really curious, though, if the case happened today, with all the ways the internet has changed things, would the Supreme Court have come to the same conclusion?
You know what? That's a question that's probably keeping legal scholars and even Supreme Court justices up at night. The internet has flipped the script on how we communicate and get our information. It's hard to say for sure what they'd decide today, but it definitely opens up a whole can of worms.
It really makes you think, huh? Like, what would the Supreme Court do today? Would they still side with Milkovich in the world of Twitter and instant everything?
Yeah, it's like, back in 90, a newspaper column, it had this weight to it, right? This sense of authority, like, it was official, but today, anyone can post anything online.
And it can spread like wildfire. It's crazy.
Totally. And that speed, that reach, that's a whole new ballgame. Stuff posted online can reach millions in seconds, and once it's out there, it's out there. It's a whole different challenge for defamation law, you know?
I bet. Plus, it feels like people are just more skeptical of what they see online anyway. There's so much information flying around, it's hard to know what to believe.
Right. We're constantly bombarded with stuff. And that actually makes these cases even more complex, because traditionally, the person suing for defamation, they got to prove that the statement actually hurt their reputation. But online, it's tougher to show that kind of damage.
It's all tied into this whole struggle with figuring out truth and trust in the digital age, isn't it? So what can we take away from Milkovich about our own online behavior? What should we be thinking about when we post and share things?
The big lesson from Milkovich, I think, is simple. Be mindful. Just because we have these platforms to spout off our opinions doesn't mean we can just say anything about anyone. False statements, damaging statements, those have consequences. We got to be responsible, even online.
It's like a digital golden rule, right? Treat others online like you'd want to be treated. Think before you post. Think about the consequences.
Exactly. And context. Remember context. Something that might seem like a harmless joke in one setting, it could be interpreted totally differently somewhere else.
It's so easy to forget that there's a real person on the other side of that screen. A person who can be hurt by words.
So important to remember that. And Milkovich, even though it's from way back, it has these timeless lessons. Even in the crazy world of the internet, words have power. We got to use them responsibly.
This whole deep dive has been eye-opening, really. We've covered so much about free speech, reputation, and navigating this whole digital landscape. It's a lot to think about.
For sure, it's complex. But Milkovich, it gives us a framework, a way to start thinking about these things, even as tech keeps changing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think we've all learned something important today. The next time you're about to hit that post button, take a breath, remember Milkovich. Think about the context, the impact your words might have, and ask yourself, is this something you can really stand behind? Is it worth it?
Words to live by, especially in this digital world. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into free speech and defamation. Until next time, keep exploring.